Blog Talk Radio.
All right, you there?
Yeah.
All right, great. Okay. All right. Well, we're already rolling, but I edit all the audio anyway, so when I'm done. So we'll just do a little countdown here. 5 seconds of quiet, and then I'll start. Welcome to the Chicago Bankruptcy Podcast, where we provide answers to all your toughest questions. This is your host, Nick Augustine, and today we are here with Chicago bankruptcy attorney Joseph Roble for Joseph Roble Limited. Joe, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, Nick. And yourself?
I am well and ready for the first day of spring coming up because the weather has been all over the place and I am tired of allergies.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, today we are going to jump back into our real life questions sent in by listeners, and we're going to get started with some issues about being judgment proof is kind of one of the first things that pops up. And it's an issue that people bring up when they are considering filing bankruptcy, but maybe they don't need to. The person has the following question. They said, I am retiring in 3 months and moving to Wisconsin. I have a truck that I owe and I am letting it go. I also have many credit cards that I can't afford to pay, and I have a loan on a furnace that was installed in my house. I can't pay for these and I'm on Social Security and have $150 pension per month. Bankruptcy is not an option. What can they do to me?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure why he says bankruptcy is not an option. Perhaps he's got too much equity in his house. That would be the one thing that I would think of, because otherwise, even if you're on a pension or Social Security or both, you can file bankruptcy, Chapter 7, and eliminate your debts. The issue is for many people in that situation, they are what we call in the industry judgment proof, meaning if a creditor initiates a lawsuit, goes to court, the case is completed, and gets a judgment from the judge, which is a finding that the money is due and owing and allows the creditor to collect any way that's legal, there's really no way to collect from this particular individual. A garnishment cannot be applied to Social Security or to pension. So the creditors cannot collect from the debtor. What they can do is they can take the judgment, file it with the county recorder's office, and it's a lien against the house, and that lien will sit there until the property gets sold and the judgment gets paid. Many clients that I interview who are in what I call a judgment-proof situation, they decide they want to file anyway because they can't handle the stress of the phone calls and the letters and having to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
For this particular client, perhaps he made an inquiry someplace else when he said bankruptcy is not an option. I'm guessing that there may be too much equity in the house and Chapter 7 isn't going to work because the house would be sold. The other issue here, he has a loan on a furnace. Even that he wouldn't have to pay because the they can't repossess the furnace like they can repossess a vehicle.
I hope they don't repossess a furnace. That'd be terrible.
Well, they can't. It's not like it's parked on the street and they can take it away. So, this question, like so many, we don't have a complete factual situation, so we'll have to give our answers as best as we can based upon what we have. So if he wants to give back the truck, give it back. If they sue him, they can't collect from him. They can't put a lien against the house, and it sits there.
Right. And for people at home listening to these are the questions that you take them as they're received. We don't have these real people available to cross-examine, I guess, and ask them. But the judgment-proof thing, my parents, the term I grew up listening to was bleeding a turnip, that you can't bleed a turnip. And, you know, it's you know, with a lot of senior citizens, when the home, you know, there's nothing to go after. And if the home is protected, and that's a different thing in different areas. Where I am here in Texas, the only person who can go after your home is the finance company if you owe them on a mortgage. But when I lived up there in Chicago, I know that in Illinois, when I worked at a law firm in DuPage County, we had more amounts that were owing. They could, you know, go after people's homes. So, I mean, it all depends on where you live. And so that's why it's so important to get real good advice on some of these things, because, you know, don't listen to me in my situation where I live, because it may be totally different where you are. And that's why it's important. You know, there's a story about a guy who lived on an island who could do his own dental work. And I suppose you could learn how to do that yourself, but I would defer to an expert, someone who knows what they're doing, of course. So that's the furnace, especially in Chicago. You don't want to have a furnace repossessed. That'd be the worst. Anyway, so best of luck to that person. All right, our next person on our lineup today is an ex-husband and co-signer is trying to file bankruptcy and wants to keep the house. So this is a bankruptcy post-divorce issue. The question is, I'm legally divorced. We agreed on splitting the mortgage and bills, and when I sell, I'll obtain most of the house. However, I've been paying on everything on my own, and he is trying to file for bankruptcy. I would want to keep the house and better yet remove him from the mortgage altogether without financing. Now, this is an interesting question. I remember learning this when I was learning family law. The court can order whatever the court orders, but, you know, the credit agencies, the other people on the other end with everything going on with financing, that may be sometimes a different story where, you know, if you're both on the hook for something and you're both responsible, you know, that's because that's where the source of a lot of these questions are. So, Joe, what do we tell this person interested about, you know, post-bankruptcy, post-divorce and bankruptcy?
Well, the two things she wants to do, she really can't. Well, number one, she said he's trying to file bankruptcy. And it sounds like she would rather he doesn't, and wants to prevent him from doing that. You can't stop someone from filing a bankruptcy. It's built into the law. No one can prevent you from filing. The question always is, does it make sense to file? What will happen to the things that you own? Can you get rid of them in a Chapter 7? Will it be a Chapter 13 repayment? Those are questions that are answered at initial consultation. She's afraid that his filing may result in her losing the house. So then we go back to what's the house worth? What's the mortgage balance? How much equity is there? What state does she live in? So you mentioned, Bonds, to the first question, the variations from state to state. And they are enormous with regard to how much equity you can have in your home, file Chapter 7, and keep it. For example, in Illinois, it's $15,000 net equity after costs of sale. In Florida, there is an unlimited amount. So knowing what the exemptions are and from state to state are very important. So let's say he does file a bankruptcy. If he files Chapter 13, it shouldn't have any effect on the house. If he files Chapter 7, it'll depend on what I've mentioned already, the equity in the house. Also, it'll depend on the provisions in the divorce decree. If she's awarded the house, even if there's equity, there shouldn't be a problem with her keeping it. The second thing that she wants to do, she wants to remove him from the mortgage altogether without refinancing. She can't. She has to get a brand new mortgage. Obviously, she would do it without him, and then he is off any loan with her. So the ideas that people have, many of them are very sensible, but they don't always work, which is why getting information from someone with experience and knowledge really makes a lot of sense. You can listen to your family and friends, and you know someone who did a Chapter 7, and this is what happened to her. You know someone who did a Chapter 13, this is what happened to him. But every factual situation is different.
Well, especially look at this situation where she has to do a refinance to do what she wants to do. The conditions to get approved for a refinance is another story, and that might have been depending on the other spouse's income or all sorts of different things. So the mystery may continue unravel, but I always say that after every good or bad financial experience, you have an opportunity to learn how to do that again or not do that again. And so that's a good thing. All right, car issues. This is a very common thing. I'll never understand how many people tell me that they're going to go buy or lease a new car to commute to a new job because it gets better gas mileage than their other vehicle. So how much would you spend in insurance and interest and auto to buy a new car to save a few bucks at the gas pump? Anyways, that's my own personal thought. But our question here with this person, they said, my car was not included in my Chapter 13 bankruptcy, but on my credit report, it says it's fully paid. Do I still have to pay on the note? Further instruction here. It says I didn't include my car payments on my Chapter 13. And my trustee says just keep paying on the car note, even though it's listed on my bankruptcy as me being responsible for the payments. But my credit report says it's already been paid off fully. But when I called into Capital One, they're vague when it comes to answering questions. Do I still have to make the car note payments? Oh, my goodness.
Well, I think the answer should be obvious. The Chapter 13 does not change the contractual relation between the customer and the finance company. And that relationship is, we gave you a loan. We have a lien against your vehicle. You pay us each month, and once we're paid off, we'll give you the title to the car. The Chapter 13 doesn't change that. She has a plan where she continues to make the vehicle loan payments directly. With regard to the credit report, I can't answer why it says it's fully paid off. Many times, and I've seen this so often on many of the cases, things happen after a bankruptcy on a credit report that are totally not understandable. When they're incorrect, they can be changed. Just like when there's no bankruptcy, you can write a letter to the credit bureau to correct what's wrong. I don't think it would say fully paid off It may say that the loan's in progress or whatever. She does need, the bottom line here is she's got a car loan. Even though she's doing Chapter 13, she's got to make her payments or she'll lose the vehicle. Oh, and one more thing. Regardless of what the credit report says, that's not a courthouse that determines what happens here. I've seen articles where it's estimated that 25% of the population of our country has at least one thing incorrect on the report. So all it is a report put together through some computer algorithms. So ignore the report. Do what you're supposed to do.
Well, and again, with those credit reports, I will never forget walking through the parking garage in the DuPage County Courthouse and asking my boss at the time, you know, what about the client's question? Because the client had a question about, you know, husband was ordered to pay the car, husband was ordered to pay all this and all the bills, and guess what? Husband didn't do it. And the wife was upset because she kept getting dinged and her credit and all these, you know, she's like, my credit is being ruined and all this. And, you know, I said, how can this happen? And he said, the court orders the husband to pay, you know, it has nothing to do with, you know, the credit report wants their money. They don't care who's been, or they just, you know, if you're both jointly responsible and liable on it, you know, so there's a lot of information out there that you can get wrong. There's a lot of people Googling to try to find the information they want to find and relying on that. Again, beware, caveat emptor, beware of what you're doing on your own. That's why we do this show, to remind people. It gets free. I mean, even if you're getting a free consultation at Joseph Robel Limited, you're going to find out exactly what you qualify for, what you need to do next. They do all of this for you to put you in charge and let you know so you can make those determinations, and that's when it's important. Okay, our next question is about a co-debtor and a violation of the stay. So it says that I filed bankruptcy and received a discharge. A creditor that was included in my bankruptcy continued suing my husband and got a judgment, and now that is attached to our joint tenant with right of survivorship home. So that's how the home is titled. But it is encumbering my half of the house as well. Is this in violation of the bankruptcy stay and discharge in Arizona? Sounds like they're talking about the automatic stay provision there.
Yeah, so bankruptcy is a federal law. The law is basically the same regardless of the state that you file in. The difference from one state to another usually has to do with exemptions, meaning what can you keep, how much money in the bank, how much cash, what can be the value of the vehicles that you can keep if you file a Chapter 7, what about the value of the home. So the lawsuit against her husband, who is a co-debtor, does not violate the automatic stay that stopped her creditors when she filed bankruptcy, and it continues that the stay continues as part of the discharge when the bankruptcy is completed, meaning that creditors are completely not allowed to bother her whatsoever. But when there's a co-debtor, as in this situation, her bankruptcy did not protect her husband. And then when the creditor received a judgment in court, the creditor can try to collect any way they wish. That's legal. And when there's an asset, even though it's owned with someone else, they can take the judgment and record it as a lien against the property, and for most states, it'll sit there until they're ready to sell. So this is one reason when a married couple takes title to their home, if their state has ownership as tenants by the entirety, that protects the spouse when there are debts by one spouse and there's a bankruptcy by just the one. So that's just something to take into account. If you're listening and you plan to be buying a home and you're married and you're going to take title jointly, tenancy by the entirety. Going back to the co-debtor question, I've done bankruptcies where a client was able to do a Chapter 7, but because of a joint debt and not wanting the co-debtor, usually the spouse, to get stuck, they filed Chapter 13, where they pay that particular creditor 100 cents on the dollar, pay it in full, and pay the rest of their creditors a small portion. And this way, you don't wind up in this situation with a lawsuit after a bankruptcy. Those circumstances don't always work out properly. Just something to think about if you have that situation.
Our next co-debtor question involves a car. Person wants to know if they are responsible. The information is as follows. This is, my ex-wife and I co-signed for a car and then we divorced. She has, since then, filed bankruptcy claiming the car's debt in her bankruptcy, which is how she's driving a new finance car today, even though the bankruptcy is still not finalized. Am I still responsible for that car's debt?
Okay. When he says the bankruptcy is not finalized, I assume it's a Chapter 13 and they're paying it back, because the Chapter 7 is over in just 3.5 months. If it's a Chapter 13, it depends on how the plan is set up. And if it's paying that debt back in full, as I indicated in the previous question, then he is protected. If it's a Chapter 7, then he's going to be on the hook. Again, if her bankruptcy was Chapter 7, even though it's not finished, it'll be finished soon, the discharge will eliminate her obligation to pay. It won't eliminate his as a joint debtor. But the other thing to look at is, what are the terms of the divorce judgment? Do those terms provide that she is to hold him harmless on that particular debt? If it is, he has the right to go back to divorce court and seek reimbursement from her if he gets stuck paying for the vehicle. It's cumbersome, it costs money, but there is that option if the divorce has that provision. So once again, we have a situation where there are multiple aspects of the law involved in a factual situation, not just the bankruptcy laws. Divorce laws come into play very much in these cases.
Yes, they do. All right, we have another vehicle question coming right up here. All right, vehicle repossessed after the bankruptcy, can they get it back? They said, due to financial hardship, my Chapter 13 bankruptcy was dismissed with prejudice, and my vehicle has been repossessed. It's probably not possible. Are there any last resorts I could explore to get my vehicle back? Thank you for your time.
If the vehicle is not sold, a brand new Chapter 13 can be filed, unless as part of the previous case or previous cases, she was banned from filing for a certain period of time. So a new Chapter 13 would allow repayment of what's behind on the vehicle or repaying the entire amount and getting the vehicle back. Obviously, it depends on the person's income. It doesn't sound like the situation is good because her prior case was dismissed, but we don't know how long ago it was dismissed. Maybe her finances have changed and a Chapter 13 will work. If the vehicle was sold, she's out of luck and may get stuck with a deficiency where the creditor will try to collect from her what's still due and owing since the sale, which may result in her looking at a Chapter 7 to wipe out that deficiency.
Okay. We have one more vehicle question. We're just all on the cars today. All right. This is about the ex-husband wants to file bankruptcy on a joint car loan. And the information is my soon-to-be ex-husband has filed bankruptcy. We have a car loan in both our names. It's my car. We've separated and been separated for 20 months. The divorce was filed 1 year ago, and since I called the bank, and the loan is through, and they said the loan is attached. Loan is through. And they stated that the loan is attached to his bankruptcy, but I can come to a branch and make voluntary payments. What's going to happen with the car?
It's a common situation here where a married couple in one party files, and they're not communicating. One spouse doesn't explain what their lawyer told them. When I do my interviews and I have that situation, I tell my client, even though your spouse is not filing, have him or her contact me. I'll be happy to explain to them what's going to happen in your case and whether it affects them or not. In this particular situation, I'm going to assume that he filed a bankruptcy for reasons other than the vehicle, because if she's making the payments, he's not going to be worried about getting stuck for any deficiency. She won't be affected by his bankruptcy. All she needs to do is keep the vehicle insured, keep the payments up to date, and she'll be able to keep the car regardless of his filing. Once again, we have a situation with a joint debt. And many times I will advise clients that co-signing for someone is not always the smartest thing to do. I've had many clients file bankruptcy because they co-signed, and the person for whom they co-signed, usually an adult child, has defaulted and they're stuck on a car loan. Many times a married couple, when one of them wants to file a vehicle, they both need to sign for the loan because the joint income is needed. You can't avoid having a joint debt.
Mm-hmm. And also from the world of divorce, and that's been my wheelhouse professionally, I have seen so many people assume that cheating and infidelity are the things that are the greatest things that lead to divorce, but actually it's financial differences, and when one person's a saver, the other's a spender, or the failure to communicate what's going on, in which case, you know, this person better figure out like how to communicate better with their spouse, or the bankruptcy is not going to be the only case they're worrying about. They're going to have a divorce case and those fees to add on to everything else, and have even further problems making those car payments. So get it together, people. All right, next one is a question about 401ks. Now, this is a really good question. And if you've never approached a situation before, you might think, I don't know if I can even get a bankruptcy because of my investment accounts and all this. So this person wants to know, on a Chapter 13 reorganizing bankruptcy and a 401k loan, they're in the process of changing jobs, struggling financially. They are in Chapter 13 bankruptcy. They want to cash out their 401k. Can they cancel my bankruptcy, I guess, if they do that? Thank you very much.
So as part of the analysis on an initial interview, one of the areas that we look at is what do you own and what's it worth? If you filed a Chapter 7, can you keep it? Is it worth too much money and you would lose it in a Chapter 7, so you need to file Chapter 13 to protect your assets? Retirement accounts, basically in all the states, don't have a bearing on the analysis. So if a Chapter 7 is going to work for you and you have $150,000 in your 401k, as long as it's been put in there steady, incrementally over the years, as opposed to taking a savings account and dumping it in there a month before bankruptcy, that retirement account has no effect on your ability to file a Chapter 7 or, of course, a Chapter 13. When you're in Chapter 13, you're making your payments to the trustee. The trustee is paying your creditors. And if you wish to take money from your 401k, it's your money. Go ahead. You can do it. It has no effect on the Chapter 13.
Awesome. This time goes by so fast. We only have one question left, and Attorney Roble has to get going here. So before we ask our last question, I want to remind people that ChicagoBankruptcy.com is the website. That's right, ChicagoBankruptcy.com. That website's been around for a while, if you can imagine. Joe Roble is also available to answer your phone calls when you get in touch with him quickly. He's there to help everyone. He wants everyone to be a financial superstar and have such great success. So a lot of the things on our website you'll find are very encouraging articles. You all also get on the social media as well, so you don't miss anything. All right, our last question for today is about a business owing money. This person says they have a business in New Jersey and they owe money to vendors, but they don't have funds to pay them, and they also need to file a bankruptcy. How do they get it resolved? So here we've got small business, and this is a common thing we're seeing more and more of.
Okay, there are times where you can simply shut down your business, particularly if the business doesn't have any assets of any value. If a vendor files a lawsuit against a business that's shut down, they've got nothing to collect against. When there are assets, the smart thing is to file a business Chapter 7. The case gets dumped literally into the lap of the Chapter 7 trustee. The trustee will gather the assets, the equipment, the inventory, the vehicles, the real estate, the bank accounts, and will properly disperse the assets, which have been converted into cash, among the creditors. And this way you will have no problem having preferred any one creditor to another. In a situation where it seems like you don't need to file a business Chapter 7, you can just shut it down. There's two things that one has to take into account. Number one, if a creditor has a lawsuit going against the business, you as the owner and the president, you can't appear in court on behalf of your business. You have to hire a lawyer. It may be that the attorney's fees for a business Chapter 7 are going to be less money than paying a lawyer to go to court for you three or four times to deal with this lawsuit. So that's another reason to file Chapter 7. The other thing to look at is contracts and leases, or even credit cards with the business. Many times the owner will have signed a guarantee on a warehouse or an office lease or a vehicle lease, or they've signed individually on a business credit card in addition to having signed as the president of the corporation. So the creditors may never be able to collect from the business, but if there are guarantees or you've signed individually, then you need to look into the possibility of an individual personal bankruptcy to deal with those guarantees. Something to keep an eye on.
All right. Well, that is it for today. And you know what? There's one thing that I can say with an element of truth here is anything that we assumed was always going to be the case before COVID may have changed. The world of finance, of debt, and everything moves so much quicker, and technology has changed a lot as well. There's so many different options for people. So get in touch with an attorney like Joe Roble to get the actual answers you need to figure out if bankruptcy is even something that you makes sense for you to do. It may be a better thing to just ride it out. Who knows? It depends on the situation. Joe, how do they best get in touch with you?
Well, I'm available directly. You can call 312-804-8416, which is my mobile number, and I'll be happy to answer questions. We can do a quick or a more detailed free consultation over the telephone. You need to be a resident of the Chicago area, Cook and the Collar counties. If you live in Montana, I really can't help you. my license is for this area. Also, I suggest going to the website, chicagobankruptcy.com. Many people don't like to talk about this. They're not sure what to do when they call up. So going to the website and following some of our podcasts like this, reading about other people's situations, answering questions, it's a very good idea to get some knowledge about bankruptcy, and then you may feel a little better when you contact us for your initial consultation.
Absolutely. The anxiety of it is always worse than all the creditors calling. I mean, even when I pay my Spectrum bill late, those people call me 500 times a day. So I get why people are stressed out, and there's a solution. I mean, you just never know what's going to happen tomorrow that can turn your financial situation around. You might apply and get another job that you didn't even know you wanted. Opportunities are just all over the place. You just have to seize them. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, people, for listening. And if you see this information in social media, share it out there because you never know who might be looking for exactly this. So thank you all and have a great day.
All right, you too. And thank you, Nick.
All right. Bye-bye now.